Today on Annenberg Radio News.
Today, I'm going to use my pen to give more Americans the chance to earn the overtime pay that they deserve.
President Obama signs an initiative to help low-wage managerial employees. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, March 13th, 2014. I'm Bryony Ng. A memorial service was held this morning for fallen Los Angeles Police Department officer Nicholas Lee. Lee died in a car collision while on duty last Friday. Stephanie Case was at the service and has this report.
6 days after the death of LAPD officer Nick Lee, more than 3,500 people gathered downtown to say goodbye. Crowds of officers packed into the memorial service, held at the Cathedral of Our Lady of the Angels. Even more stood outside, listening in on speakers. LAPD officer Sharon Kim says the mood was somber.
You know, when the bagpipes first play, it hits home. And you know that it's kind of just like that cry of, you know, feeling that loss. You know, I saw Officer Lee's wife with their two daughters, and, you know, just knowing that they're never going to have that father growing up with them and giving them advice and feeling that, it's heart-wrenching.
Lee was an officer in LAPD's Hollywood division for 16 years. He died last Friday while on the job in Los Angeles when a large truck lost control and collided into his patrol car. Kim says she was blown away by the turnout.
I just talked to an officer, a patrolman from Providence, which is all the way out on the East Coast by Boston. Just the community, it isn't just in California, but it's all over the nation.
Sheriff's Deputy Jernation Raimundo drove from San Francisco. He says the law enforcement community is always supportive.
For us, it's really the thin blue line. You know, we stand together, we grieve together. In their time of grief, we will be there for one another, close or far.
LAPD Chief Charlie Beck and Mayor Eric Garcetti both spoke at the service.
Nick Lee had love that he radiated out. And you as the family are the center of that circle, still today with him, right now, and always.
A motorcade of police cars drove to Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Glendale for Lee's burial. His patrol car will be retired in his memory. Stephanie Case, Annenberg Radio News.
Students and teachers at Maya Angelou High School are asking questions and demanding that LAUSD officials reinstate their principal. Yolanda Rangel has not been on the job at the Fine and Performing Arts Academy since March 6th. As Stephanie Monty reports, there are more questions than answers at this point.
Today was the first rally in front of the Maya Angelou Community High School at 300 East 53rd Street, where parents, students, and teachers protested the removal of Principal Yolanda Rangel. She is pending an administrative review by the Los Angeles Unified School District. Ron Goches is a history teacher at the Maya Angelou High School. He says community members have unified to demand answers from the district.
We have been asked in the district what happened to our principal, why is she not here, and they refuse to answer all questions. The only thing they have told us is that she is not fired and that she has not been removed as principal of this school.
Goches says when he and other concerned staff have asked about Rangel, LAUSD has replied that all matters are personal and confidential. Educational Service Center's East Superintendent Roberto Martinez issued a statement that says every student should be educated in a safe and caring environment and graduate college prepared and career ready. He did not provide any additional information about Principal Rangel's removal. Rangel was the principal at Maya Angelou High School for only 6 months. Supporta says she was known to have brought order to the campus along with tutoring, health, and fine arts programs. Organizers from RASA Educators LA, South LA Power Coalition, and MECHA have started a petition to get the principal back, and they're planning to hold many more rallies.
We're going to go through all the steps possible and necessary to make sure that they know that we want our principal back, and we're not going to allow a political attack against our principal to really bring down what we worked really hard to build at this school.
Monica Torres is a former student of Rangel who attended the protest this morning outside school gates. She, like all the other students, aren't sure what happened.
The students were protesting because their principal was taken off campus last week, and since then they haven't heard from the principal and they haven't been giving a response as to what's happening or why she was taken off the campus.
Before she was principal of Maya Angelou High School, Rangel was the administrator for the School of Public Service and Social Justice at Santee Education Complex. She has helped lead community events in South Central Los Angeles including barrio cleanups, workshops, and forums on issues such as immigration, education, and community development. Stephanie Monti, Annenberg Radio News.
A South LA intersection that has seen more than 700 accidents in the past 10 years is getting a stoplight today. Jenna Pittaway took a look at some of the changes being made at 48th Street and 11th Avenue.
We're in the 8th District, so we're going to do a countdown. Okay. 8,
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
LA City Councilman Bernard Parks and 5-year-old Sydney Jones turned on a streetlight today at the intersection where Sydney's mom died last year. Kim Everett was with her friend Tiffany Baymore when Tiffany was struck by a passing car and died.
Yeah, it was speeding. It was an SUV, and he was going extremely fast. He didn't even stop. This is going to help a lot.
The Los Angeles Department of Transportation made big changes to the dangerous intersection that they hope will reduce the number of accidents. Engineer Bill Slocum describes the changes.
Yeah, there used to be two lanes here on each direction, and they made it one lane with left turn pockets and a bike lane. It's a lot safer than it was before, and it should slow down traffic as well.
Crenshaw High School is just down the road, and many of its students cross the intersection daily. The school's principal, L. Reeman Corley, warned students that personal safety is still important.
The fact that we have this signal here doesn't mean that now you can just bypass. We have to ensure that we're passing very safely. We're looking left and right before we pass.
Councilman Parks also gave out bike helmets to some of the school's students and encouraged the community to ride more. Construction is about 75% complete, and the bike lanes will be extended to cover more of the area. Jenna Pittaway for Annenberg Radio News.
A South LA health clinic took it upon itself to pay its workers more as a nationwide debate over the minimum wage heats up. The St. John's Well Child and Family Center is voluntarily making the move towards a living wage for its employees. It's hoping others will follow their lead, as Logan Healy reports.
It's a social justice issue for us.
That's Jim Mangia, president and CEO of the nonprofit St. John's Well Child and Family Center. Standing with union leaders and elected officials, he announced today that St. John's will pay their frontline employees at least $15 per hour, or what he calls a living wage.
It's kind of incomprehensible when you think about it that an anti-poverty organization would pay poverty wages.
Mangia says the wage hike comes as St. John's workers are taking care of 40% more patients than they were a year ago. He says that increase is because more people are receiving insurance from the Affordable Care Act.
We're willing to pass on whatever we can to our workforce.
Fabrizio Perez is a patient navigator at St. John's who's been working there for a year and a half. He started at $11 an hour and struggled to get by after his mother got hurt and couldn't work.
I was pretty much paying all the bills, and I was also going to school at night.
Perez is a member of the SEIU Local 721. The pay raise at St. John's comes as part of a 3-year contract agreement with the union. The $15 wage will go into effect next year.
We're setting trends here in California, and we're here at St. John.
Mangia hopes that's the case. He says corporations use the recent recession as an excuse to pay workers less. He says that's making it harder for Americans to enter the middle class. This comes as corporations are reporting record profits.
They've got billions of dollars in the bank. We don't. They can definitely afford to pay their workers better, and they don't.
Fast food employees across the nation have been staging protests calling for a $15 minimum wage since last year, and hotel workers in LA took their case for a living wage to the city council earlier this month. Business groups say raising the minimum wage through government action will hurt profits and force them to fire workers. Logan Healy, Annenberg Radio News.
Tonight, it'll be mostly clear with temperatures in the low 50s. The next few days should be hot and sunny, with temperatures rising to the 90s by the end of the weekend. Later on Annenberg Radio News, hear how the materials in your cell phone may be the cause behind the conflict in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Supporters of Covered California Healthcare gathered today to celebrate the growing number of new registrations and how to get more Latinos to sign up. Sam Dawn has the story.
Since October 1st, more than 3 million people have registered for healthcare under Covered California or Medi-Cal. Sally Namath signed up as soon as the exchanges opened.
Everything, you know, came in the mail in a timely fashion, my first bill. And it was a lot lower than what I'd been paying before for better coverage and complete continuity of care, so I'm really happy.
Peter Lee is the executive director of Covered California. He says the number of Latinos registering doesn't reflect the size of the community in California. Evgeny Feynman, a fellow at the Manhattan Institute's Center for Medical Progress, agrees.
In terms of the sheer numbers, there's a big problem with convincing Latinos to enroll. A lot of them are hesitant because they're not used to the concept of insurance.
For that reason, Covered California has recruited famed California labor leader Dolores Huerta to reach out to Latino communities. Huerta recorded several radio ads and YouTube videos for the organization. When speaking today, she invoked two heroes of the Latino community, Barack Obama.
¿Se puede o no se puede? Sí se puede. ¿Se puede o no se puede? Okay, tenemos que hacerlo, so we can do it.
As well as Cesar Chavez, whose birthday falls on March 31st, the day enrollment closes.
Let's give Cesar Chavez on March 31st, let's give him a birthday present. Let's enroll in the Affordable Care Act.
While registration totals have already surpassed the six-month base prediction, Covered California is planning to keep pushing until the registration closes. Sam Dorn, Annenberg Radio News.
President Obama moved to expand overtime protections today for millions of low-wage earners in management positions across the U.S. This follows Obama's recent minimum wage order and has some critics complaining that it'll kill jobs. Anna Sterling spoke to labor and economics experts about this new initiative.
Now, overtime is a pretty simple idea. If you have to work more, you should get paid more.
For millions of people across the U.S., that's not happening. If you make more than $23,660 a year and have manager or supervisor in your title, you're not eligible for overtime pay. Typically, these manager positions are not paid by the hour, but are given a yearly salary. But the president says many of these salaried employees work more than 40 hours a week. And when you take that into account, they're earning less than minimum wage. Ross Eisenberry of the Economic Policy Institute explains why overtime rules are in big need of an update.
We're in a situation where the law has been updated so infrequently in the last 30 years that it's pretty much obsolete and doesn't provide overtime protection for millions of workers who ought to have it.
Jobs that fall into the current exemption include convenience store and fast food managers, retail workers, and secretaries. The president says these jobs mainly involve work that isn't managerial. They include stocking shelves, waiting tables, or working the cash register. Steve Smith of the California Labor Federation says President Obama's initiative makes sense in the economic climate we're in.
Wages for the average worker have stagnated or dropped, while those at the very top see their incomes continuing to rise. And it's a very good sign that the president is taking concrete steps on overtime pay, on minimum wage, on other issues to ensure that we're building the middle class from the bottom up.
Business groups and some Republicans say moves like this are job killers. That idea is disputed by Ken Jacobs of UC Berkeley's Labor Center.
We tend to see in the business community is a strong overuse of the job killer argument. Any regulation, any rules is proclaimed to be a job killer, regardless of what the empirical evidence is.
To have a real discussion about overtime hours and raising wages, Jacobs says we need to define what we're asking.
Will the total number of hours worked reduce? It might. Some of these people who are working very long hours for very low pay may work fewer hours for the same pay. I think most of us would consider that a good outcome. If we mean by this, will the number of people who are employed go down? It's likely to have the opposite effect.
Changes to the law include either raising the salary threshold or making clearer who a manager is. Labor Secretary Thomas Perez will consult with workers and business leaders before putting final regulations in place. Anna Sterling, Annenberg Radio News.
A boy is born in Hot Dam, Mississippi, surrounded by...
Several members of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, protested outside the Pasadena courthouse today. As Ella Bernal reports, the crowd was there to support one of 19 people arrested for protesting the SeaWorld float at last year's Rose Parade.
Several PETA members stood outside the Pasadena courthouse today to support Amanda Slater. The 25-year-old was arrested at the Rose Parade last year for running in front of the SeaWorld float.
When all of us saw SeaWorld's deceptive float at the Rose Parade, showing orcas with their families leaping in the sea, we were all very upset.
A total of 30 people held signs outside the courthouse reading, "SeaWorld hurts orcas," and "Protest SeaWorld." This resistance to the park began 4 years ago, when the documentary Blackfish showed the negative consequences of keeping orcas in captivity, which included killing humans.
Orange County Sheriff's Office.
We need SO to respond for a dead person at SeaWorld. A whale has eaten one of the trainers.
But not everybody agrees. In a previous interview with PBS, SeaWorld veterinarians said that releasing the mammal could actually put them in danger because they are so used to being taken care of by humans. PETA member Lisa Lang said running in front of the float was necessary.
It's something that we had to do. It's something that we had to protest because it was animal cruelty celebrated on the world stage, and that just can't happen.
Slater was charged with an infraction for interfering with a special event and pled not guilty. Her lawyer, Matthew Struger, said they would invoke the rarely used necessity defense,
which basically is a legal defense saying that even if someone violated a law, they violated that law to save your own life or to save other life.
The pretrial for Slater will start next month. Ella Bernal, Annenberg Radio News.
In spite of a peace deal, the Democratic Republic of Congo is still in the grip of a humanitarian crisis in which millions have died. Pastor Kasereko Kasomo came to USC to raise awareness about the role of minerals in aggravating
several
the conflict. I managed to grab 5 minutes with him to get his views on the conflict and what needs to happen for it to end. Why have you come to USC today?
Today I came to USC to bring the awareness about what is going on in the Democratic Republic of Congo. There has been violence for over 20 years now. I mean, extreme violence going on around conflict minerals, and sometimes people don't hear about it in the right way. People hear about it in a politically correct way. But the reality many times is different from what people know, especially over here in the United States of America.
Can you explain what people generally assume about the conflict and how the reality is different?
Very few people know that really the center over the duration of the conflict has been around the minerals and other natural resources that we found in the Democratic Republic of Congo in really big quantity. They think that it is just ethnic problems.
So tell me about the conflict minerals and the role in aggravating the conflict.
In 1994, many people heard about the genocide in Rwanda. And, you know, so many Rwandese people flocked into Congo. And when they moved into Congo, they start, you know, creating some troubles for Rwanda and Uganda in many ways. So the Rwandans and Ugandans decided to go and flush out specifically those refugee camps that were in the eastern part of Congo. But when they walked into Congo, they found more than flushing out the refugees. They found a lot of wealth and say, hey, what is this? And it was like getting anything they wanted from the jungle. Nobody was responsible. Why not just stay and start exploiting these natural resources that are here? the multinationals, I will say, directly involved in what is going on in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And at least now we are seeing them accepting, start saying, okay, let's see if we can find out where these minerals we are using are from.
So is part of your work raising awareness about these multinational companies and trying to get them to change their sourcing processes?
Yes. I don't want them to say, okay, then we don't buy your product anymore. That will be another extreme. Because Congo, we don't know how to use those gold or diamond. Let them create a proper way of doing business with Congo. There are proper ways they can do that. They don't have to go kill people to get it. No. They don't have to go through other countries to get them. No. Why not going to the Congolese people themselves? Well, they talk about corruption in anything in Congo, but that's not a sufficient reason to kill people so that you will extract what is under their feet.
So it's the multinationals that are supporting this, but how is it exactly working on the ground?
Well, it is a kind of channel. The channel is that they go to some neighboring countries. They sponsor them. They say, we give you money. You know, next door we need coltan, and then those people in those neighboring countries are very, very bold, and they say, okay, let's do that. And they go to Congo and say, hey, so-and-so, why don't you accept to work with us? We are going to equip you with weapons, but on one conditions, you know, that section over there, you need to kill everybody there, then we can dig and find what is underground. And that's what had been happening, and really on a very, very high scale. I mean, violence and extreme styles of killing that Congo had never known before. My wife's granduncle was found 2 weeks after he had been axed in the middle of his head. I mean, he was already decomposing. An old man of 75 years old. I mean, he didn't have anything to do with politics. He even doesn't know what is underground in that. He didn't know. Why did they kill him? Just to create the kind of atmosphere where they will feel feared and then they can do whatever they want to do.
So this conflict has been going on for years, as you said. How do you envisage that the conflict will end?
Personally, I think that the conflict will end when really the countries where the multinationals come from will be able to create some laws that will help those multinationals to be able to work in human way, not the way of making violence itself as a commodity.
That was Pastor Kasereka Kasomo talking to us about conflict minerals in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The Crenshaw district is at a pivotal point. A new subway line is expected to bring economic changes to the neighbourhood. And one community in particular is leading the effort to revitalise its businesses. Daniel Carr Crawford has more from Lemert Park.
Lemert Park is a centre of African American life in Los Angeles. It features various cultural displays every week, including a drum circle. Even though it is culturally vibrant, businesses have seen better days in the area. Lemert Park has seen a steady decline in commerce over recent years, and many residents are fed up with lack of attention from the City of Los Angeles. A community action plan, known as the Lemert Park Charrette, has been created to address the needs of the community and find out what those living there truly want. Meetings have involved members of the community from all walks of life.
Oh, good, you're there. It's Heather Prechet, Keller Williams Realty. How are you, Kelly?
Heather Lee Prechet runs her realty business out of Lemert Park. She is also head of PR for the Charrette. She has seen progress towards a new Lemert, but she says there are a number of issues that must be fixed first.
There's a huge dichotomy between the old school and the new school. There's the old school, the elders that want to preserve the area as the culture, and then there's the new school folks. They want a coffee shop that's open at coffee hour. We still want to preserve the culture and the arts, but we also want the convenience of stuff. You know, we don't want to have to go outside of our community to get stuff, but it's just not here.
The area is gradually changing economically and demographically, and the Charrette hopes to capitalize on this by creating a more diverse array of businesses. Brian Blake, a resident of Lemert Park for 52 years, has seen the area grow.
I always think you need to go forward, because if you stay regular, you can't go nowhere. So you got to advance and go forward. So I think anything that pushes you forward is good.
For the Charrette to be a success, however, members of the entire Crenshaw community must unify to improve Leimert Park.
Up the hill, you've got doctors and lawyers and very affluent Black professionals that don't come down the hill to patronize the businesses in Leimert Park. And going forward, I think that's going to be a really important part of us being successful, is to be able to bring everybody in the Crenshaw community to this triangle.
If this holds true, then the unique blend of culture and commerce that residents dearly want will become a reality. Daniel Carr Crawford, Annenberg Radio News.
People around Chinatown are angry about a proposed stadium in a historic site. JJ Maldonado has the story.
The Los Angeles State Historic Park sits on 32 acres and is also known as the Cornfield. It has been used for rock concert events that can draw 70,000 people for a weekend of electronic music. Sarah Harris, a Solano Canyon resident and neighborhood council representative, says the noise level from the events set her on edge.
They roll through our communities. My colleagues at Little Tokyo, residents in Lincoln Heights, have complained of like low-frequency rumbling that shakes houses, and these events go until 2 in the morning sometimes.
The Save the Cornfield Coalition says more concerts would only increase noise pollution and disturb ancient grounds.
Colonized settlements in Los Angeles proper and the San Gabriel Mission, the Portola Trail, are all connected to this space. And so it's a space with, you know, thousands of years and then hundreds of years of history.
The Department of Parks and Recreation did not respond to calls for comment. The department has proposed the construction of the stadium as a way to cover the cost of an $18 million renovation. The protest is scheduled for 6:30 p.m. tonight at the Goodwill Industries on the 300 block of San Fernando Road in Los Angeles. JJ Maldonado, Annenberg Radio News.
Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Sonic City! Sonic City!
I'm a conductor, Amtrak. I run trains up and down the West Coast, going to San Diego, going up to Santa Barbara, Goleta, San Luis Obispo on a regular basis.
Hola. Y bienvenidos.
My favorite part of the metro is probably the speed and how far you get for such a cheap price. It was only $8 for a student to get from Claremont to LA. So.
Sonic City!
Now we check in with Ashley Regal to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Hi, Ashley. What have we got coming up tonight?
Hi. Thanks, Bryony. The death toll continues to rise from the Harlem gas leak explosion as NYPD pulls bodies out of the rubble. We have reactions from New Yorkers. And today marks the one-year anniversary of Pope Francis's rule over the Catholic Church. We'll hear from Catholics to see if they're pleased with his work. Plus, the Student Coalition Against Labor Exploitation says they'd rather be naked than wear USC's apparel. We'll tell you why. Tune in to ATVN at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision to get the full stories.
Thanks, Ashley. Keep clicking on our website, annenbergradio.org, for more news about South Los Angeles. And remember to follow us on Twitter at Annenberg Radio. On this final note, talk about waking up in strange places. A Mississippi man woke up to find himself in a body bag this morning. The 78-year-old was mistakenly pronounced dead by the coroner 2 weeks before his miraculous recovery. Doctors say a mix of medicines may have caused the misdiagnosis. That's it for this Thursday. Our production assistant is Lexi Macavinci. Graham Clark produces our arts and culture segment, and the newscast producer is Victor Figueroa. Our executive producer is Denise Guerra. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Bryony Ng.